being, it is really fundamentally un-American.
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Drug war!
No more!
Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer, and our guest for the evening is London Police Commander Brian Paddock. But first, I want to present the Christmas season hero of the week. On December 17th, the 89th anniversary of the beginning of drug prohibition with the Harrison Narcotics Act, an astounding ruling came down from the Ninth Circuit Court. They ruled that the Interstate Commerce Clause of the Controlled Substances Act was unconstitutional in regards to the rights of medical marijuana patients with a doctor's recommendation in the states where laws for compassionate use of marijuana have been passed. The government lost the case of Angel versus Ashcroft. Here is Angel Rach.
The justices answered my prayer for relief and cited for me. I won my case in this round. So justices have asked the case to go back down to the lower court to Judge Martin J. Jenkins for a preliminary injunction, which is a tremendous ruling. It is the first time in the history of the Controlled Substance Act that there has been a crack punched right in the middle of it, and as it applies to us, the Controlled Substance Act is considered unconstitutional.
I was just going to say, what do you anticipate will happen next? Will there be an appeal by the feds?
Very well may. The federal government from day one has been afraid of us in our case because of the fact that we have such clean facts in our case. And there is a large factual record. There's no way that they can go up against our facts and win against us. And so it really is significant. And I would imagine they're probably sitting in their office trying to figure out how they're going to come at me next. And they very well could appeal it to the Supreme Court. However, if they do appeal it to the Supreme Court, I have every intentions of standing up and fighting this battle with them. I have no intentions of backing down. I have no intentions of going away. And if it takes every last breath in my body, I will continue this fight. I have absolutely no doubt that that it's over. This is probably just a stepping stone. You know, this time we won this round, and we, as medical cannabis patients and caregivers, really needed a victory. It means that a lot of patients in all the states that support medical cannabis, you know, can sleep easier tonight. And I think that's important. I think that it's important that patients and caregivers feel safe. It's important to feel safe in one's own home.
Angel versus Ashcroft. And at least for now, the angel has won. And that's why we name Angel Rach our hero of the week. Brian Paddock, a London police commander who was responsible for the softly approach taken towards cannabis consumers in the London suburb of Brixton. His policy of no longer arresting cannabis consumers for possession is to become the policy this January for all the United Kingdom. I'm speaking with Officer Brian Paddock. How are you today, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
Yes, sir. I followed the exploits, if you will, the situations that developed in Great Britain as best I could through the Guardian newspaper. And I'm wondering if you might explain to my listeners your interpretation of what went on over the past couple of years and your situation with the police department over there, sir.
Yeah, I was in charge of a precinct in London with about 1,000 police officers under my command. And we were having real problems. We had high levels of street robbery, high levels of burglary. We had drug dealers shooting each other. We had high levels of crack cocaine and heroin being openly dealt on the street. All of a sudden, my officers decided that what they were going to concentrate on was arresting people for small amounts of marijuana. This arose out of a sting operation by our internal investigations department, where they suspected a patrol officer to be taking the marijuana and taking it home with him. And so what they did, they planted some marijuana in a car, and when he took it and threw it away, they arrested him for not doing his duty, for not taking it to the police station and booking it in as he should have done. And he went on trial at the Central Criminal Court in London, charged with misfeasance in a public office, which carries life imprisonment as a maximum penalty. And the other patrol officers said, look, you know, we have been dealing with marijuana informally, unofficially, by taking it off people and throwing it away. We're not going to do that anymore because we don't want to end up in the same position that he was in. And so we're going to arrest every person that we find in possession of small amounts of, even if they're in a possession of a small amount of marijuana. So according to the official police policy across the UK, police officers were not allowed to do that. They had to arrest on every occasion, and they were effectively saying we're going to work according to the rule book. So I decided that we needed to change the rule book, and we needed to introduce a system that allowed police officers to see small amounts of marijuana and give a warning to the individual on the street and no further action taken against them. I decided, maybe wrongly, that my bosses would not agree with such a scheme. So we floated it in the newspapers as an idea, and the reaction of the media at that time was mainly positive. And my boss came in behind me and agreed to carry out initially a 6-month pilot, which was extended to 12 months. And during that 12 months in my part of London, officers did not arrest anybody for possession of small amounts of marijuana. Instead, they just seized the drug and issued a warning, and that warning had no legal status. We seized the drug and no further action was taken.
Now, there were other ramifications. If you would, explain some of the fallout that came forward from that scenario.
Well, for the first 6 months, everything went well. And then some conservative elements within the police force itself decided that this wasn't a good idea. A senior officer at Scotland Yard wrote an article where he said that he expected drugs tourists, people coming from other parts of London, into my area because we were more relaxed about marijuana in that particular part of London. And he also, listening to some local people, again on the conservative wing, they were telling him stories that about school children turning up at school stoned, and he repeated these anecdotes in this article, and that began a very sort of negative campaign in the media against what was happening. What actually happened when you look at the police statistics, the percentage of people being arrested in my area who came from outside that area went down during the period of the pilot compared with the period beforehand. So there was no drugs tourism going on at all. And we surveyed every head teacher of every school in the area, and they said that there were less instances of their kids either caught in possession of marijuana or smoking marijuana at school than they had been before the pilot started. And eventually that police chief conceded that in fact he had been wrong to listen to these isolated stories and to prejudge actually what the statistics showed. So there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, but eventually a tabloid newspaper, a very right-wing tabloid newspaper called the Mail on Sunday, got in hold of a former partner of mine. And it was a sort of, I was somebody who they really didn't like at all. One, that I appeared to be taking a softer line on drugs, and two, I was openly gay. And they found a former partner of mine who was very bitter about the way that we had broken up our relationship. And he was paid $170,000 to accuse me of smoking marijuana with him whilst we were in the relationship. amongst other things. He talked all about our private life. He talked about what sex was like between us in our own home, in our own relationship, and this was plastered all over the tabloid newspapers. As a result, the police decided, even though there was no other evidence other than what he said, despite the fact that he'd been paid large amounts of money, the police decided that there should be a full criminal investigation. I was removed from my post and put into a holding job for 8 months while they investigated these allegations. And even though at the end of those 8 months they took no action at all against me because there was no evidence to support the allegations that he had made, there was no criminal action, there was no police disciplinary action taken against me whatsoever, I was not allowed to go back and take up my job again. I was kept in back office jobs for about another 6 months before they gave me a decent job. And what I say when I say a decent job, the jobs that they gave me for the period when I was under investigation and for 6 months afterwards were jobs that nobody had before. They were invented for me to keep me out of the way. And it's only in the last 3 or 4 months that I've actually had a job that somebody was doing before. So I know that it was a real job because somebody was doing it before.
You know, Brian, here in the U.S., and particularly in my home state, and even more particularly in my city of Houston, it has become a huge industry. My city of Houston sends more people to prison for possession of less than a gram of drugs than, you know, any other city in the world. And we just recently had a scandal where the crime lab, who controls the analysis of drugs taken in, was shown to be totally inept, that the supervisor didn't even know how to run the machines that do the analysis. You've been here in America, I guess, before, but what is your take on the American system? And I'm not asking you to make a judgment, but what have you perceived?
I mean, my view, which I openly shared with the world on an internet website called urban75.com, was that drug addicts, those people who are actually addicted to these drugs, which is a very tiny proportion of those that take illegal drugs anyway, but those who are addicted should be treated as victims of crime, not perpetrators of crime. At the end of the day, they need medical help. They need medical intervention. They don't need prison. I mean, there are stories in the UK, and I hear it's more or less the same in the US, where you get people going into prison who are not addicted to anything, and they come out heroin addicts. Even though, I mean, from the description I gave to you of the precinct I was in charge of in London, where you had crack cocaine and heroin being openly dealt on the streets, when I went and saw the governor of the local prison, because we had a prison inside the precinct, he said that drugs were more readily available inside the prison than they were on the streets. Now, you know, if people think that locking people up, drug addicts, locking drug addicts up, or even locking other people up who are not addicts but are caught in possession of small amounts of drugs, and putting them in prison is going to be a safe place for them to come off drugs, then that's not the reality. Locking people up for possession of small amounts of drugs does nobody any good at all, and it costs the taxpayer thousands and thousands of dollars.
Here's where we usually take a short little break, and we'll be right back. For centuries, marijuana has been known for its ability to spark up a little romance. It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Weakness, blurred vision, vomiting, nausea, abdominal pain, diarrhea, irregular heartbeat, drowsiness, confusion, hallucinations, disorientation, and convulsion. Time's up. The answer, mistletoe. Oh wait, that's not FDA approved.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
Okay, we're back, and you are listening to Cultural Baggage on the Drug Truth Network, and our guest for this evening is London Police Commander Brian Paddock.
Yes, Brian, I work very hard towards bringing the truth to my listeners, hopefully helping to make a change in the U.S. policy. Do you think the development around here, was it in Brixton?
Mm-hmm.
That the change you brought about there helped to bring about a change in policy in Great Britain, which they have just moved from, was it Class B to Class C misdemeanor for possession of marijuana?
Sure. We had been doing this pilot in Lambeth for about 7 or 8 months, and the government minister who has responsibility for drugs laws gave evidence to a parliamentary committee where, citing the Lambeth, the Brixton experiment, he said that he was considering reclassifying possession of marijuana from a Class B drug to a Class C drug. And what that means is from a maximum penalty of 5 years imprisonment down to a maximum of 2 years imprisonment. And then about 6 months after that, when all the medical experts told him that that was the right thing to do, and the police, even the police, or some of the police said that was the right thing to do, he made an announcement in Parliament to say that that he was going to go ahead with the reclassification. And more than that, he expected in almost every case for the police to seize the drug and warn the individual and not to arrest them. So even though the statute stayed on the book allowing 2 years imprisonment for a first offence, what he said was that he wanted the police to concentrate on the drugs that cause most harm. He wanted them to concentrate on crack cocaine and heroin, and effectively that the police were wasting their time arresting people for small amounts of marijuana. So he didn't actually follow through in terms of law to make sure that the police officers could not arrest people for marijuana, because at the same time he reclassified, he also introduced a separate law to continue to allow the police to arrest people for marijuana. But he and his fellow ministers said what they were hoping to achieve by reclassifying the cannabis was for the police not to arrest people in the vast majority of cases, not to arrest and not to charge them with a criminal offence, but simply to seize the cannabis and to warn them, which was exactly what we were doing in the pilot in Lambeth.
I seem to recall reading something in the past few days that one of those instances where they might still arrest people, or where they certainly wanted to hang on to the option to arrest people, would be, say, smoking in front of a school when children were there. Would you discuss that side of it?
Yeah, the government minister has come up with a series of what he calls aggravating factors, or circumstances where he would expect police officers to make an arrest. So if somebody is openly smoking marijuana in the street, if somebody is in possession of marijuana close to a school, if somebody is behaving in a disorderly way, or if there is an area within a precinct which has a particular problem with marijuana, then the local police chief can tell his or her officers to make arrests. Now, they're sort of you could say they're pretty laudable sort of reasons why somebody might get arrested. The difficulty is it leaves the discretion at the end of the day down to the individual police officer or the individual police chief, and individual police officers or individual police chiefs' prejudices could result in people getting arrested, rather than the laudable aims that the government minister wanted the police officers to pursue. At the end of the day, he should have had the courage of his convictions, in my opinion, and stayed with his original plan, which was reclassify, move the penalty from 5 years to 2 years, which would have taken it away from the police. The police would no longer have had the power to arrest. At the end of the day, you know, I'm not saying marijuana is good for you. Marijuana has some health issues attached to it. Smoke too much of it, in the same way that if you drink too much alcohol, that doesn't do you any good either. But, you know, we're not talking about locking people up in jail for parking where they shouldn't park, or for a traffic violation, and possession of marijuana should be in the same category as those things.
Here in the U.S., we wasted well over $1 trillion so far on this drug war. We've put well over 30 million of our citizens in prison, and yet the drugs are more, they're cheaper, more freely available, purer than ever before. Any advice you could give to any police officers that might be listening to this show?
Well, what I said to the parliamentary committee that I also gave evidence to was, the principle you should adopt is this damaging my community? And yeah, if you have a chaotic drug addict who cannot afford to support his or her habit and is going round and mugging people or breaking into people's cars or breaking into people's houses, then that's not right. They should be arrested for that major offence. If they are addicts who can't help themselves, then they should be helped put into treatment. And what I would say to law enforcement officers is get together with the health providers, get together with those people who provide rehabilitation facilities for drug addicts, because that's the only way you are going to reduce the crime associated with chaotic drug addiction.
You've had the chance to meet with some of these other law enforcement officials who have gathered at this convention, mm-hmm. The gentlemen who operate the organization LEAP, mm-hmm. Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Mm-hmm. What do you think of their efforts?
Well, I think the reason why I was attacked in the UK is the same reason why these law enforcement officers carry a lot of credibility. I mean, these guys, like me, have had 20 or so years experience. I've got 27 years experience of policing. And we know that the drug war as it's being fought at the moment just doesn't work. And we need to look at radical new solutions if we are going to deal with the damage that drugs cause to society. And it's all very well for addicts or recovered addicts or other activists to campaign for this, but they can very easily be written off by politicians as, well, you would say that there is a vested interest. But here you've got law enforcement officers, people who worked on the streets, people who spent their careers arresting people for drugs offences, and they are saying that the whole business needs to be looked at again, the whole business needs to be reformed, and that carries a lot of weight, and people should really listen to what these guys are saying.
If you would, you know, tell us some of the positive results that you see hopefully coming to us from some of these changes.
Well, I mean, we spent 12 months in my precinct in London where we didn't arrest anybody for possession of marijuana, and serious crime in every category went down because my officers, rather than spending 5 hours at a time booking people in at the police station for small amounts of marijuana, they were spending more time out on the street dealing with the crimes that really damaged the community in Lambeth and really hurt the local people. So, and there was no noticeable, no measurable increase in marijuana use as a consequence of that. So really, so there was lots of positives came out of that and virtually no negatives. And so, you know, people who are really concerned that if we decriminalize or even if we legalize marijuana, that there's going to be an explosion in use, there's going to be an explosion in crime. That 12-month experiment in my part of London showed that does not happen. So that's a really positive thing to come out of it. And the other interesting thing is, okay, you know, as a law enforcement officer, I stuck my head above the parapet, and I got a really really rough time from one section of the establishment, if you like. On the positive side, the local community called a meeting, and 600 people turned up demanding my reinstatement. A 5,000 signature petition was handed in to Scotland Yard demanding that I was reinstated to my job. 20 members of the British Parliament signed an early day motion demanding my reinstatement to the job. So the trouble with the drugs issue is it divides people. You get those who are absolutely in favour of change, you get those who are absolutely opposed to any change, and you're always going to get that division. All I would say is you've got to take the courage of your convictions, you've got to say what you believe, and you've got to try and get the truth out there. And it's very, very difficult. I mean, you say that you read in the Guardian newspaper about how things had unfolded. I had real trouble to get the Guardian newspaper to print the truth about what had happened with the pilot in Lambeth. They would only print it if it was in a column which was headed that it was my personal opinion. So even the guys who appear to be on our side, when push comes to shove, I think there are pressures on them as well. But at the end of the day, I'm really glad that I did what I did, that we have achieved some change. And what I would say to law enforcement officers in the US is you too can be very influential in moving the policy on drugs forward, if you just use a bit of courage, and you can lead the way where the politicians are afraid to go.
All right. Brian Paddock, Officer Brian Paddock of the London Police Department, I want to thank you for joining us on Cultural Baggage, sir.
It's a pleasure.
I want to report that it certainly was a pleasure to do this interview with Officer Brian Paddock, and I also want to report that subsequent to our interview, he has been awarded £450,000 in damages against the newspaper which had defamed him. As we begin to look back at the year 2003, we have many drug war heroes, and one that I'm not sure was ever named for our weekly award, our good friend and fellow Pacifican, Ed Rosenthal.
The court decision, apparently, I'll be able to grow my own, and I look forward to doing that, and to showing my probation officer my garden and medicating while he's there. That will be a fun day.
Well, Ed, I think I got enough for the segments I'm going to do.
This is Ed Rosenthal, triple felon, courtesy of the federal government. I'm looking forward to talking with you next week on Cultural Baggage.
We close with thoughts from Mr. K in the Harris County Jail and his family.
Daddy, I love you so much. I miss you so much.
I love you too. Give your mom a hug for me. Give your grandmother a hug. Tell everybody I said hi. Tell them all to send me a letter, okay?
I'm so sorry. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, and I love you. Enjoy your Christmas, okay? Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. Y'all take care. I love all you guys.
I love you, Dad.
1.6 million times a year, we do this to drug users and their families. Potions and pills, witchcraft. The elders of Salem would be proud of the elders of Prohibition as well. Merry Christmas. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.